Yeah, okay. So there is a kasha that the Kli Yakar is bothered by that. I wasn't really sure it was really a kasha, but then when you delve a little deeper, it's a Kli Yakar. So obviously it really is a kasha. We just have to figure out why it's a kasha. And he notes that there are two interpretations of Rashi that seem to be a stira with each other. And he asks it as a kasha, he asks it as a stira. On the one hand, Yaakov approaches Esav and he sends the message, Im Lavan Garti. And Rashi has two interpretations of what he was trying to tell Esav when he said, Im Lavan Garti. First, Im Lavan Garti, and Lona Asesi Sar V'choshuv Elager. That I was a ger the entire time. Meaning at a certain point, sometimes you acclimate to a community and you start rising in the ranks, you become a native, you become someone who's respected as one of them. He said, it never happened. I was always an outsider. As long as I was there, I was always a ger. I never became a sar v'choshev. I was never able to reach my full potential. I didn't experience any great bracha that was promised. You know, you were so worried about losing the brachas because of all the bracha that was promised to me. None of the bracha happened. It didn't happen. It was a miserable life that I was with Lavan. Yaakov himself, we discussed last week, described how miserable the life was living by Lavan. On the other hand, he says, Rashi explains, Im Lavan Garti, more famously, V'taryag mitzvah shamarti, that Garti is the osios of Taryag, so the gematria of Taryag, therefore also, since it's the same exact letters, so and therefore Taryag mitzvah shamarti. So it would seem, on the surface, that those two interpretations can both be true, meaning adraba. It could be that that's exactly why they're true, meaning that because Taryag mitzvah shamarti, you were never going to acclimate, you were never going to become a sar v'chashuv, meaning if you act differently than everybody else around you, and you're living a totally different lifestyle, obviously you're not going to become a sar v'chashuv. And Yaakov is relating to Esav, I didn't enjoy covet and political success, but what I was able to do is I was able to maintain my religious commitment. So why is that a stira? But Kli Yakar understands it as a stira. So why does he understand it as a stira? So Kli Yakar sees that it's not just two interpretations, but it's really two completely different attitudes that reflect entirely different levels of confidence. You know, if somebody wants to pick a fight, so there are two approaches that you could take to convince him not to react to being attacked or to being slighted. I mean, there are two ways you could try to talk him down from wanting to pick that fight, from wanting to engage in that fight. One approach you could take is you might say, why would you pay attention to that person? That's so beneath you. That person's a nobody. You're gonna occupy your headspace with that person? That person is they have no shaychus, and nobody cares what that person has to say. The only person who cares what that person has to say is you when you pick a fight with him. No one else, he has no impact. He's a nobody. So just ignore him like everybody else ignores him. He's not worth any of your emotional energy. That's one mahalich that a person could take. The other mahalich a person could take is the total opposite. You might say, you're going to pick a fight with that person? Are you nuts? That person's going to squash you. That person's going to destroy you. He's too powerful. He's too big. Just keep your head down, hold your nose, apologize, because you're not going to defeat a person that's that powerful. Those are the two mahalchim. So Kli Yakar understands, Yaakov is trying to convince Esav, you shouldn't fight with me. But there are two ways that you can convince Esav not to fight with you. You can convince Esav not to fight with you because you're a nobody and you're not worth his time. Or you can convince Esav not to fight with you because you're too great, you're too powerful, you're too strong. He has no chance against you. And that's where the Kli Yakar sees the stira. Because the first interpretation says, I didn't have very much success. Yaakov's telling Esav, I'm not worth fighting with because I'm a nobody. Second interpretation takes the opposite attitude, says, I was extremely successful. And if you had any idea of the power of the zuchus of Taryag mitzvos, you would realize that this is not a fight that you can win. This is not a fight that you never pick a fight that you can't win. I'm just too powerful for you. And Kli Yakar is bothered by the juxtaposition of those two interpretations, meaning when viewed in that light, so on its surface it's not a stira, because one can maintain a religious commitment and at the same time never feel like they became a sar of the choshev in the community that they were visiting, but on a deeper level, based on what Yaakov was trying to accomplish, it's a stira. Which mahalich was he going with in terms of why Esav shouldn't fight with him? So, I think there's a yesod. I once got a shidduch call about a Talmud. And, I often get shidduch calls about Talmudim. So,
single guys, watch out. I get a lot of calls about you. And the girl's father wanted to know if the boy was, you know, everyone has their own shidduch questions. You can learn a lot about people from their shidduch, you know, just like what questions they ask. So the girl's father said, his first, and one of his only questions actually, was, is the boy ambitious? That was the word that he used. Is the boy ambitious? So it's a tricky question because ambition reflects itself in different ways. Sometimes ambition reflects itself in the desire to finish the entire Masechta, even if it's a long and difficult one. Ambitious, he's going to do every Beis Yosef in Hilchos Nida. Every Sidrei Tarah, he's reading through every Sidrei Tarah. That's ambition. And the guy's like, what law school is Sidrei Tarah? Like, you know, like, I mean, you know, where he's coming from. That's not ambition. That's sitting like a schlepper in a Beis Medrash all day. I want to know that if you're going to, you know, that you're going to make money. I want to know that, you know. So the father-in-law didn't have, the prospective father-in-law didn't have that kind of ambition in mind. He wanted to know, is the boy a go-getter? Is he going to push to advance his career? A different kind of ambition. The proper Jewish attitude toward being sameach b'chelko versus always wanting to achieve more is that in the arena of ruchnius, we should never be satisfied. In Ruchnius, we're always looking for the next battle. We're always looking to grow. We're always looking for where we can accomplish more. In the arena of Gashmias, in the area of Gashmias, the goal is to be Sameach B'chelko. So we say, you know what? Whatever I have is more than enough. It's what I need. It's Daivos. It's more than I need. I've often quoted the Vart that I once heard from Rabbi Isaac Bernstein, Zichron Levracha, that so you're not allowed to make a pesel v'chol tumuna, any image of that which is in the heaven or that which is down here on earth. So that's simple reading of the pasuk. Don't make an avodah zara, a getchka, an image of celestial beings or anything found on earth. But on a different level, a derech drush level, Rabbi Bernstein Zichron Levracha explained that when searching for motivation and searching for role models to look up to, don't try to make yourself a mirror image of somebody else. Meaning, you need to do you. You can't try to be somebody else. Right? Meaning, if you have a very charismatic Rebbe or someone who's very impressive, like you know, Rav Schechter, you can't try to be Rav Schechter. You know, it's not shayach. You're not going to do it as well as him. You know, you're not going to, or you know, like someone who's you know totally unique. Rav Moshe Weinberger. You know, many of Rav Moshe Weinbergers tell me them waste their time trying to be Rav Moshe Weinberger. They're all gonna, you're gonna fail if that's what you're trying to do. You have to be you. You have to figure out you. So then, what do you do with your role models? How do you use your role models then? If you got to do you, so. It's true both, by the way, individually and institutionally. Meaning, how do we utilize others in our quest for self improvement? Sasher b'shamayim, when it comes to heavenly matters, when it comes to matters of ruchnius mima'al, look to those who have more than you, who've achieved more than you in ruchnius, and use them for inspiration. That if that person was able to dedicate that much time to learning, or that person was able to, you know, to enhance their davening even in difficult times, or even in easy times where it's harder to enhance your davening, you know, so then maybe I could do that too. Use that as inspiration. Rasher ba'aretz. But when it comes to material matters, when it comes to earthly matters, mitachas. Look to people who have less than you and are still happy. You know, if you're upset that you can't afford this or that, that you're not able to, whatever it is, you know, afford a fancy vacation, going with taking your family away for Pesach, whatever. You know, there are people that can't afford a lot more basic things than that. And when a person is looking in those two directions simultaneously about those two items, they'll find that there's a lot of room to be happy and there's a lot of guidance in their own growth. When Yaakov Avinu says Yeshli Kol, as opposed to Esav's Yeshli Rav, they're identifying fundamentally different attitudes toward material wealth. Whatever Yaakov has is enough. Whatever Esav has, he's looking for more. So, the Bas Ayin, I was just the outside. Bas Ayin is very fashionable to quote right now. So the Bas Ayin has a remez that says Lev Chacham Liyamin, Lev Ksil Lesmal. So what does that mean? Lev Chacham Liyamin, Lev Ksil Lesmal. And a Chacham's heart is toward the right, and a fool's heart is toward the left. So I remember when I was in Yeshiva, in Karim Yavne, the Yeshiva said, that if you take any Hebrew Sefer and you read it, so the pages you already read are on your right side. The pages you haven't read yet, the pages you haven't learned yet are on your left side. So the Lev Chacham is the Yamin. He's always going back to Chazer. He's always going back to review the Dapin that he's already learned to make sure that he has himself. Lev Ksil, the small. The fool is always looking out, when can I get the next stuff, next stuff, next stuff, next stuff, and he ends up not holding on to anything. Okay, that was a nice reference. That's not what the Basayan says. Basayan points out in Hebrew language we read right to left. So if you take the word lev and you look at the letters that are to the right of lev, meaning the preceding letters in the aleph bays, what comes right before lev? Which letters are to the, and you look at which letters are to the left of lev, meaning the letters that follow lamed and bays in the aleph bays, you'll find that to the right is aleph and chaf, ach. To the left is gimel and mem, gam. The chacham, like Yaakov Avinu, is a minimalist. Ach, he's always mema'et. The fool, the Esavs of the world, on the other hand, they look to the letters to the left, which spell gam. A gam is always larabos. For an Esav, it's never enough. He always needs more. So a lev chacham is the amin. A chacham says, you know, whatever God gave me, I have enough. I have everything that I need. He's a minimalist. It's ach. Whereas Esav, a lev ksil is the small. The Ben Yoyada, Babasu Dav Chavav, adds that there's an attitudinal difference between the way we look at spiritual accomplishment and how we look at material accomplishment. Spiritually, we should always be looking as if we're lacking and we need more. Materially, we should always consider what we have to be plenty already with no need to add. In ancient maps, the south is on the right and the north is to the left. Right? The ancient maps are not oriented the way our maps are oriented. Our maps are oriented where north is on the top and south is on the bottom and east is on the right and west is on the left. That wasn't the orientation of ancient maps. It was always where the south was on the right, north was on the left, east was where we were oriented to the top, right? So when we face Mizrach, with Davening Shemoneh Esrei, the south is on our right and the north is on our left, right? Meaning that when we orient ourselves in tefillah, the south is on our right, the north is on our left. And the Gemara says, Harotza lahachkim yadrim. A person who wants to become a chacham should view himself as if he's to the right of lev. He is an ach, a small person who needs more. Harotza lahashir yadrim. When someone wants to focus on materialism, when that's what your goal is, so then it's important that it's important to look in the other direction to the letters lev to the letters to the left of lev, which indicate gam, that we already have so much. Rabbi Yoni Levin pointed out that Rabin Biad Ma'atim might mean that those with the attitude of Rabin of always wanting riboy and material success were given over in the hands of those who have an attitude of ma'atim, a more minimalist approach, meaning people who were satisfied with a little less in gashmius so that they could achieve a little more in ruchnius. So the idea, whatever the answer to the Kli Yakar's question is, the idea that Yaakov Avinu at once is willing to say, you know what, I didn't achieve in gashmius, but I achieved a ton in Ruchnius, is really setting the agenda for how we're going to defeat Esav. Meaning he's telling Esav all at one time, you're not going to defeat me because I have the proper attitudes in both areas of my life, both in Ruchnius and in Gashmius. And I'm always striving for more in Ruchnius. And in Ruchnius, Tarig Mitzvah Shemarti. Whereas in Gashmius, I've never achieved greatness in Gashmius, nor is that my dream to achieve greatness in Gashmius. You know, there was a lot of talk about a year ago, because this is when I gave this drasha, in Mishpacha magazine about Yeshiva Bachru. It was actually the whole thing was started by a guy in North Woodmere, about whether it's healthy for so many boys in the yeshivish world to be brought up on the notion that success is defined as learning for 14 hours a day. And if you can't do that, in a sense, you failed, right? So Moshe Weinberger gave a very hour-long, passionate argument that attitude is killing people. that if you don't learn 14 hours a day, you're a lowlife, you're a nobody, and you know, and then people feel like a lowlife and a nobody, and they go off to all sorts of other things. And he essentially took like major shots at the entire yeshiva system with a lot of love, but you know, the way he expressed it, you know, with a lot of very tough love. But I think it's important to realize the flip side of the equation. When Chashivas HaTorah is emphasized above all else, there's definitely a cost, and Rabbi Weinberg spoke about that. I'm sure you could find the recording somewhere, even though it was taken down or whatever. You know, I'm sure it's there somewhere. So you could hear that side of the equation, but the flip side of the equation is also something that's very, very important. And really, you know, the Rav Weinberger side of the equation is essentially what Rav Lapiansky wrote a whole book about, you know, Mentorah for Life, to try to build people up that even if you're not going to always be learning 14 hours a day, you can still be, you're not ice mensch, you can still be a person, you can still be a Mentorah, you can still be a Mentorah for life. Even when you're working most of your waking hours, even when you're doing things that are not inherently spiritually satisfying, because there's meaning in all of it. But we should also should consider the benefit of such a message, of such an upbringing, of Talmud Torah above all else. You know, the Avas HaTorah that's developed sometimes through that messaging, you know, as a person grows up, hearing that over and over again. I remember about a year ago, I was in Lakewood one night with, I don't remember the occasion, but one of the members of my shul, I think, was dedicating a base medrash or something. I don't remember what exactly, but he asked me to come with him to Lakewood, so I went with Rabbi Shai Shechter, who was also close with this fellow, and we went to Lakewood together. And after the dedication of the Beis Medrash, or whatever it was that he was doing, we had to catch a Maariv somewhere. So we walked into a random shul, you know, not so hard to find a shul in Lakewood, a random shul. The place was packed at night with Balabatim sitting and learning. Packed. And it wasn't yeshiva guys. I mean, it was former yeshiva guys. It was Balabatim sitting and learning. And, you know, you walk into to I was in Houston for a Shabbos about a year ago. At night, there's a Lakewood Kollel there, and people are sitting and learning. Balabatim are coming early in the morning, sitting and learning. There's something that happens with that messaging. You know, I don't want to be makatrig against the modern Orthodox world, and certainly, you know, where everyone's punching bag, you know, for... sometimes for good reasons, sometimes not for such great reasons. And I'm not getting into hashkafa over here. Leave hashkafa aside. But even while our doctors and lawyers and our businessmen may be better positioned to live a life of balance, you know, growing up within our communities and broadly speaking, maybe have a better understanding of how to handle money properly, there's something very wonderful and very beautiful about many of the products of a system that emphasize Torah above all else, that emphasize the Asher B'Shamayim Ima'al, that sense of Torah being what ultimately defines our success. I think that's got to be part of our mission statement in terms of certainly those of you going into Rabbanus and Techinuch, and maybe even more so for those not going into Rabbanus and Techinuch, is to bring to our communities and to develop and build within our communities that sense of dedication to Talmud Torah, of Chashivus HaTorah, while still not losing out the balance that we have in our lives, and that's important. And to make sure that if a kid can't learn 14 hours a day, he doesn't feel like a nice farf and a nobody, whatever. But there's a balance there. We have to make sure that Chashivus HaTorah, that desire to appreciate Torah learning, and not just appreciate it in other people, but to actually do it and to create a cult Torah within our community. It's the next step. It's like what we're ready for. You know, for the whole 1940s and 50s in America, the goal was just keep the kids marrying Jews. Right? That was the goal. So start all these day schools across in the 60s and wherever else, you know, across the country. Just get them Jewishly affiliated, staying within the Jewish fold so they can marry Jews. And that was a major battle. Make sure the mechitzas stay up in shuls. It was a major battle. And that battle, thank God, was won for the most part within the Orthodox community. sadly, it was lost in a huge way outside of the Orthodox community. But it was won within the Orthodox community. So the next battle became, you know, to enhance actual Shemiras HaMitzvos and the Kiruv movement and everything else, and working within, you know, creating halachic Judaism within the modern Orthodox community, that we should care more about halacha, that Hilchos Shabbos should mean something to us, not just, you know, whatever I feel like, and, you know, I'm Shabbos observant because I don't go to work that day. And that battle also, largely, not entirely, and still a lot of battle fronts on that, was, you know, has been won in many, many, many circles. Then there was, okay, let's start giving our children the ability to learn Torah, the capability to be able to learn independently. How are we going to do that? We're going to build a passion for it by sending them to Israel for a year and you know, create a passion for Eretz Yisrael and a passion for Torah. And then that became 2 years, and now that's pretty much the standard in most of the gap year yeshivas. No longer gap year yeshivas, they're the formative yeshivas of where you really become who you become. So amazing that people still use that term gap year, which doesn't make any sense. Gap year implies like you're just filling a hole. And it's not what it was in your lives. It wasn't just filling a hole. I don't know what to do for a year. I'll just go, you know, spend some time in Israel. No, it's like how you defined yourself is by what you did in those couple of years. It's how you built yourself. And that battle was won, thank God, for many, many, many of our communities. Again, not on all fronts. So what's the next step? So to stay a third year? I don't know if that's the next step. To stay learning a little bit longer? Yeah. We've spoken about that. After guys finish college, just because you can go to graduate school, why not learn again? Full time for a little bit before going to graduate school, and like, thank God, a lot of people in our yeshiva are doing that now. That's become a thing more and more. I think the next step is that Balabatim should be learning night seder. Balabatim should be learning morning seder. Not like go to a shir and hear a shir, but to actually have a kol Torah. You should be able to walk into a modern Orthodox shul. Again, however you define modern Orthodoxy, but I'm saying like a shul that affiliates, you know, with our Rosh Yeshiva, let's say. Not defining modern Orthodoxy as, you know, shul that affiliates with our Rosh Yeshiva. You should be able to walk in at night, and you should be able to hear a kol Torah, you should be able to hear the booming. Asher b'shamayim imal. When we're looking communally at where we can learn from, you know, we're always complaining about the expense of tuition and this and that. Asher ba'aretz mitachas. Look at those who have a lot less. Go pay a visit to some of the communities in Israel and see how they're doing financially. And how they find joy and happiness in life anyway. But Asher b'shamayim imal, when it comes to what we can achieve in Ruchnius, so we have a job to do. So let's go out and fight that fight that battle. Right now, let's go. Okay. God willing, one day. Okay, everyone have a wonderful Shabbos.
I think I'm going to have a phrase of the same message to the new Shalkimimi, because it's an 8-day program.